This is VOA News. I'm Steve Dorman. Ukraine has accused Moscow of illegally seizing three of its naval ships off Russia-annexed Crimea. We asked Robert Manning, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, if this is Russia flexing its muscles.
I think they're turning it up a notch, for sure. Again, we don't know all the details in terms of international law for freedom of innocent passage and so on, and whether or not Ukraine violated that or not. But, you know, it's clearly an escalation.
Russia confirmed today it fired on the vessels and then seized them. At least 30 passengers drowned, dozens more are missing after a pleasure boat sank in Lake Victoria in Uganda. At least 27 people were rescued. Moses Ali is the first deputy prime minister.
An investigation has been instituted into the matter, and a report will be issued as soon as it is ready.
The boat is believed to have been overcrowded with nearly 100 people aboard, double that boat's capacity. The owner could face charges of criminal negligence as well as manslaughter. After months of negotiations, Britain and the European Union have agreed on how the UK will be leaving the EU next year. British Prime Minister Theresa May must now sell the deal to her divided parliament. Democratic Unionist Party leader Arlene Foster says May is not standing by her Brexit commitment to her party.
What I'm calling for is a better deal. I'm asking Theresa May to listen to what her parliamentarians are saying and to listen what those of us who are supporting her in government in terms of the confidence and supply agreement are saying. Because remember, that confidence and supply agreement was to be about shared priorities in terms of Brexit. And certainly for us, this is not something we could sign up to.
There is an intense opposition from pro-Brexit and pro-EU lawmakers alike in the British Parliament. This is VOA News. U.S. authorities have reopened the San Ysidro border point on the entry between the city of San Diego, California, and Tijuana, Mexico. They had stopped all north and southbound traffic after 500 men, women, and children tried to rush the border.
The San Ysidro port of entry is now closed. Exit in the proper manner to the nearest exit of immigration checkpoint.
About 5,000 Central American migrants, many of them attempting to escape poverty and violence in their home countries, have arrived in recent days in Tijuana after making their way through Mexico on a caravan. President Trump has implored Mexico and Central American countries to halt the stream of migrants heading to the United States, even as Mexico denied his claim that it would be willing to allow U.S. asylum seekers to stay there until their cases were decided by American immigration courts. Russian warplanes have attacked rebel-held areas in northern Syria for the first time in weeks. This comes as Syrian officials said more than 100 people were treated at hospitals for a suspected poison gas attack in the northern city of Aleppo. Damascus and Moscow blamed it on the rebels. Human Rights Watch says the reports of suspected chemical weapons attacks should not be left without investigation. Australia is proposing new laws to make it easier to remove citizenship from convicted terrorists. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says people who commit terrorist crimes on Australian soil will no longer be welcome.
People who commit acts of terrorism have rejected absolutely everything that this country stands for. They've rejected the beliefs of this country, the values of this country. They have disrespected every other citizen who shares that privilege of citizenship with them.
Ministers also want to ban people involved in terrorism overseas from returning to Australia for 2 years. It would be similar to legislation in the United Kingdom. A magnitude 6.3 earthquake struck western Iran near its border with Iraq late on Sunday. More than 500 people were injured. The region was the epicenter of an earthquake you might remember last year that killed more than 600 people and where some people still remain homeless. The board of Mitsubishi Motors is meeting. They're doing that today to decide whether to oust Carlos Ghosn as chairman of the Japanese automaker, which is allied with Renault-Nissan. Ghosn was arrested a week ago on suspicion of underreporting his income by millions of dollars for 5 years. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, November 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa says it will close today due to alleged terror threat, but the government says DRC is not a terrorist country.
According to the announcement, the Congolese authorities put military and police to enforce the security of the embassy. But I can ensure that everyone is very surprised because we are not currently a terrorist country.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for the ruling coalition in the DRC. The managing director of Liberia's Housing Authority and his deputy are barred from leaving the country pending the conclusion of any alleged corruption investigation. And 31 people are dead in Uganda and many still missing after an overcrowded boat capsized on Lake Victoria.
There is, just like in many other areas in our country, a very gross failure of the state in regulating and managing transportation on the lakes.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is former leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. Burundi arrests 4 army officials for their role in the assassination of a president. And we'll tell you why the meeting between Zambia's president and an opposition leader is being criticized. And helping West Africa achieve 100% access to energy by 2030. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa says it will close to the public today, Monday, because the embassy says it received credible and specific information of a possible terrorist threat against U.S. government facilities in Kinshasa. The embassy also advises U.S. citizens in the Congolese capital and throughout the country to maintain a heightened level of vigilance. The DRC is in a campaign mode for its presidential election next month. The embassy also warned of potential unrest in the weeks leading up to the December 23rd election. But the DRC government says the embassy claims are surprising, since the DRC has never been a terrorist country. Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition.
Everyone in Kinshasa was surprised by this announcement of the U.S. embassy. Currently, we don't see what kind of risk of terrorist action can be took against the embassy. So, according to the announcement, the Congolese authorities put military and police to enforce the security of the embassy. But I can ensure that everyone is very surprised because we are not currently a terrorist country.
The embassy also warned of a possible potential unrest in the weeks leading up to the December 23rd election, saying that this unrest could take place on short notice.
Everyone here, the opinion I can say, the current citizen is surprised. But I think our intelligence service with the embassy know that the IDF, I think, they often threaten to take an action against U.S. interests in Kinshasa. And probably they had some evidence that the past impact is defined. But honestly, the current opinion of Congolese people in Kinshasa is that this announcement is not true. It means that Americans are preparing a coup against the power in Congo. This is the current opinion, but I have no evidence of the terrorist act.
Why would the United States want to stage a coup in Democratic Republic of Congo?
No, I don't know. I say the current opinion, because currently we have not recorded any terrorist action in Kinshasa. So for this first time, this announced from American embassy is seen as just a coup prepared by embassy of the United States. That means that we have no evidence of the preparation.
But the embassy also said there is a potential for unrest to take place before the election.
No risk of potential arrest. All the candidates are now in campaign. Today, a lot of them were in Martin Stadium to attend the mass of the new Archbishop of Kinshasa. And there's no fear of violence.
Why is there a public opinion that perhaps the U.S. could be preparing a coup d'etat against the power?
I tell you what I heard. They say it isn't possible. We never recorded a terrorist act against the embassy. Why just now during the presidential campaign? Why? I don't know. I tell you what I heard from the people of Kinshasa.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. 31 people are dead in Uganda and many still missing after an overcrowded boat capsized on Saturday on Lake Victoria, about 31 miles south of the capital, Kampala. President Yoweri Museveni said the boat, which had the capacity for 50 people, was carrying about 120 passengers. He has vowed that the operators of the boat will be charged with criminal negligence and manslaughter. But one report says the owner of the boat and his wife are among the dead. Boat accidents on Uganda's lakes are common. Dr. Chisa Besigye, former leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, says Saturday's tragedy is the result of the lack of regulation of Uganda's water transport.
It was indeed a very tragic event that happened Saturday evening. The information available is that this boat had more than 100 passengers on board. This was a leisure travel arrangement of some friends who were partying and going out from somewhere near Kampala to an island that was not far off from the mainland. Now, what is, I think, most annoying is that many of the people on this boat did not have life vests on them, and I think there weren't enough vests on board. Secondly, it is clearly apparent that the boat was overloaded. There have been very many accidents in the Lake Victoria, but also on the several other lakes that are in our country, Lake Albert, Lake Kyoga, Lake Edward, and others. And it is very clear that there is no regulation on the vessels that ply on these lakes. So there is, just like in many other areas in our country, a very gross failure of the state in regulating and managing transportation on the lakes.
But Dr. Besigye, President Museveni issued a statement on Sunday saying that his government has ordered the electronic registration and monitoring of all boats so that they can know who is where and on which lake.
I haven't heard his statement. I don't know whether his statement indicated when that order was made and whether it is reduced into a legal framework, whether there is a law regulating transportation on these lakes that spells out those rules. And certainly if they are there at all, which I highly doubt, they are not enforced or they are observed by total disregard. And as I have said, almost daily there are very fatal accidents on all the lakes that we have in this country. And certainly that is the more critical thing. Whether there is regulation or not, it means that they are totally ineffective.
Dr. Besigye, a very sad situation, but we are happy to have you to give us the update. Thank you very much.
Very sad indeed, and my thoughts and prayers are with the families of the victims and all their relatives and friends.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is the former leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 26. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The managing director of Liberia's Housing Authority and his deputy are barred from leaving the country pending the conclusion of an alleged corruption investigation. A Justice Ministry press release says Doana Soyun and Tugbe Tugbe are allegedly heard on a purported audio recording published by a Front Page Africa newspaper discussing the solicitation of bribe to perform their official duties. Moses Carter is the spokesman of the Liberian National Police.
Well, I can confirm to you, Moses, that the National Housing Authority Managing Director has been invited by the Liberian National Police to answer to reports of alleged bribery, as was reported by the Front Page Africa newspaper. And so it's in this week that we've thought to invite him to provide information on the report as published.
What exactly is that information? What does it say that the police is dwelling on?
The Front Page Africa had reported information that the National Housing Authority boss confirmed in a recording, secret recording, which is perhaps can be admissible or non-admissible in court, that there was some amount of money contributed to the National Housing Authority, and of that money, some higher-ups in government were requesting for some amount as a way of certifying the agreement. And so it's with this that the Liberian National Police chose to invite the National Housing Authority boss to provide clarity on the matter.
How serious and thorough is this questioning going to be?
It is going to be very serious and thorough. I can assure you that, Moses. Because, you see, one of the things that will lead to the international community working with the government of Liberia is on the basis of transparency and accountability. And so, based on that, we think as a police force that is supposed to ensure the enforcement of the rule of law, people who are said to be treading contrary to the law should be made to answer to issues that will allay some of the misconceptions in the public. And if such investigation is not conducted, it will mean to the world such report from the Front Page Africa is something real. And so our interest is to make sure that we establish whether the report from Front Page Africa is real or it's not real.
You say it's going to be robust. Is the police hoping to invite more people?
Based on probable causes, based on information that we will receive from the NHA boss, we'll certainly invite other persons.
Moses Carter is the spokesman of the Liberian National Police. He spoke with reporter Moses Gaziewu in the capital, Monrovia. Burundian authorities have arrested four army officials for their role in the assassination of former President Mikhail Ndadaye, who was killed in 1993 after a military coup that led to a decade-long ethnic violence during which more than 100,000 people lost their lives. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
It was Saturday morning when security forces cordoned off the homes of the four retired army officials. The four, one a retired army general and three colonels, were taken to the country's Supreme Court. Sylvester Nyandwi is Burundi's attorney general.
Some high rank officers who have been arrested, they are accused to have been involved in a 1993 coup, in which the first president democratically elected, Mekio Ndadaye, was assassinated with other officials.
Ndadaye, Burundi's first democratically elected president, was assassinated in 1993 in the capital, Bujumbura, after just 3 months in the office. The assassination sparked an ethnic violence that developed into a decade-long Burundi civil war that led to the killing of more than 100,000 people. Sylvester Ntibantunganya is the former Burundi president and was a minister in Melchior Ndadaye's government.
Burundi was in a political system were not opened. And before elections, it was necessary to organize a transitional period. And I think that it is the main reason which conducted to the assassination of President Ndadaye by some actors from the army of Burundi who was not prepared for democracy.
According to the United Nations investigation about the murder released in 1996, Ndadaye's army command was accused of being responsible for the assassination. Burundi Attorney General Sylvester Nyandwi explained why the arrest happened after 25 years.
So we took our time to gather evidences, and the case is still pending in the Supreme Court. We are doing this in order to fight against the impunity in our country, because so many offenses have been committed in the impunity without being punished.
As the four accused veterans were remanded on Saturday afternoon, Burundi's Attorney General indicated that more arrests will be made in the coming days and warrants issued to even those who fled the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The leader of Zambia's opposition Republican Progressive Party has criticized the recent meeting between President Edgar Lungu and main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND. James Lukuku says Hichilema betrayed supporters who lost their lives due to politically related violence. The meeting between the two men cleared the way for a much-anticipated national dialogue on electoral reform, political tension, and violence. James Lukuku explained to viewers Peter Clotty why his party rejected the meeting.
We are very much concerned with the fact that the dialogue should take place. In the first place, we lost it when we could not allow the involvement of the Commonwealth representative, that is the Nigerian Professor Gambari, to be at the front of the national dialogue process. Because in as much as we believe in ourselves as Zambians, and this being an internal matter which we can preside over, the fact is that an international organization like the Commonwealth was better placed, because that Commonwealth was with powers that could actually sanction this nation if we did not go about the agreements or the solutions that you can put through in the national dialogue.
So why is your party opposed to a meeting that paves the way for this national dialogue to happen? Why are you opposed to it?
The reason why we don't agree with the step that has been taken by having President HH and President Edgar Lungu meet is for us to show to it that this national dialogue is not something that must be centered on the patriotic front. It's not a dialogue for HH and it's not a dialogue for Edgar Lungu. Because if that was the case, then the best that must have been done was to put it to political parties, and then we don't call it as a national dialogue. It could have been called the UPND Patriotic Front Dialogue.
James Lukuku is leader of Zambia's opposition Republican Progressive Party. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka, a regional body dedicated to achieving 100% access to energy by 2030 in all of West Africa, is trying to achieve its goal through multiple approaches. One of these is helping private sector business owners launch businesses that provide off-grid renewable energy sources, such as solar panels. Yuri Handam, who is in charge of the project, talked to Ricky Strike about their plans for 2019.
So we're looking at supporting the governments, the policies and regulation. We look at it and see how favorable they are for this type of standalone systems. And we also have a huge amount of work that we do for the entrepreneurs, going from training the entrepreneurs, capacity building on their financial, how they manage their business. And on the first and second one, we are looking into providing some grants, because the financial component, which is component two of project, which is some financial support for the private sector, which doesn't go through ECRE, it's gonna go through a development bank, who then will distribute that through the commercial banks or microfinance institutions down to the private sector.
Are you finding an increasing interest from local populations in certain countries, people who want to invest in this, people who want to start standalone systems?
Yeah. Yes, it's definitely very diversified if you go from one country to the other. So, for example, Senegal has been doing great for the past 2 years. There's three or four companies that their businesses.
Locally owned companies?
Local registered companies, but often they have some support from outside. What we're trying to do is with the tier ones, which are mostly local, and they usually have the hardest.
They don't have access to credit.
Exactly. They have more difficulty in having access to credit. So that's why we are trying to get additional funds for the project, so that we have a grant component for those that have feasible projects, but because of their very recent history, they cannot have access to credit. So we'll provide those grants to kind of boost them in the right direction. So, but there's a huge difference between the different countries. There's countries that are completely virgin, let's say like that. They have not done anything, and they don't know the technology itself, so there's a lot more work to be done.
That was Yuri Handam, the technical coordinator for the Regional Off-Grid Electricity Project. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Five minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the ongoing 2019 Women's African Cup of Nations currently holding in Ghana. Holders Nigeria and South Africa have joined Mali and Cameroon at the semi-finals of the competition after the completion of the group stage on Saturday. South Africa, who beat Nigeria and Equatorial Guinea in their first two Group B games, needed just a draw to progress, and they did just that against neighbors Zambia. South Africa, who beat Nigeria and Equatorial Guinea in their first two Group B games, needed just a draw to progress, and they did just that against neighbors Zambia, with both teams settling for a 1-1 draw in the Group B ultimate clash at the Accra Sports Stadium. Nigeria, on the other hand, accounted for Equatorial Guinea's 6-0 loss in Cape Coast to seal the second spot and join the South Africans at the last four. Thomas Denaby is the Super Falcons coach.
But of course, we are very, very happy to be in the semi-final. And we reach our first goal. Now the next goal is to secure a ticket to France next year.
Head coach of Bayana Bayana, Desiree Ellis, says she was not impressed with the performance of her team against the Chi Polo Polo of Zambia, and that they will have to do better against Mali in the semi-finals.
If you can not play well and still grind out a result, it's also important because it shows that we can grind out a result. But, rather now than, especially in the semi-finals, we know it's a do-or-die match. It's our final. We've really got to be at our best. It's going to take a performance like the Nigeria type of performance to get the result and realize our ultimate goal of going to the World Cup.
For the semi-finals, Cameroon will face Nigeria in a repeat of the 2016 final in Accra, while South Africa will battle Mali in Cape Coast, both on Tuesday. And now to rugby news. Coach of South Africa's national rugby side, the Springboks, Rassie Erasmus, has praised Wales for their 2011 victory over the Springboks in Cardiff on Saturday. Coach Erasmus said afterwards that the Welsh were the better team, and he offered no excuses after the Springboks' disappointing end to the international season.
This game, I just felt the Welsh were better than us, and tactically, and this outsmarted us, so take that on the chin. Our problem is consistency.
In basketball news, Mozambican side Favoriviero de Maputo claimed their first ever FIBA Africa Women's Championship Cup title after beating five-time winners Interclube 59-56 in Sunday's final in the Mozambican capital city of Maputo. Earlier in the day, Nigerian champions First Bank Basketball secured the last spot on the podium after dismantling Vita Club from DR Congo 93-69 in the third place game. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, November 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.